You've struck the invincible.
Indestructible. Informational. Inspirational. Shield of Faith with Mike Heath. Minister, speaker, writer, warrior for King Jesus. The devil's sword can't even dent this shield.
We shall never surrender.
Our faith makes us more than conquerors.
I'll be back.
Overcoming the world.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall never surrender.
And now, here's our host, Mike Heath.
This is Mike Heath with Shield of Faith. Thanks for tuning in. And earlier this summer, I was had the honor of being in Wichita, Kansas. And while there, I got to meet an evangelist who interested me greatly. His name is Rodney Keister. And Rodney is joining me by phone from Pennsylvania. And Rodney, thanks for being on Shield of Faith.
It's wonderful to be here and a great honor. And God bless each of you that are listening today.
So we found ourselves together in Wichita because you were drawn to the Operation Save America outreach there, which was aimed at supporting local police and also fighting abortion. But that's you're an evangelist. You travel the country, and tell us a little bit about how it is you came to do that. And before you do, let me mention that. To the listeners, Rodney is coming to Maine in early October, and so I'm introducing him on the show today, and he's going to have a request for or an opportunity for you to get involved. So, Rodney, go ahead. How did you end up in Wichita, and how do you come to be an evangelist?
Well, actually, I am an evangelist, but I would classify myself more of a missionary evangelist. The Lord led us back in 2006 to start doing street ministry, and it was through some major miraculous events in our own life that God drew our heart in that direction. One of those was calling us to close down a business that I ran, and just being about ministering full-time. I was pastoring at the time a small church outside the city of Allentown in Bethlehem area, Pennsylvania. And as the Lord was calling me to close my business and concentrate on full-time ministry, I always liked passing out tracts and just doing personal evangelism. But shortly after answering that call and committing in my heart that I would close my business and just concentrate on 100% ministry, it was a growing thing as I began to go out on the streets, began to evangelize. My heart creating a mission work that the foundation is not so much a specific mission location. Like often we think of a missionary as they're called to Africa, or they're called to Indonesia, or they're called to a certain country or a certain location, where in this event we would be evangelizing souls. So our mission work became evangelism, just reaching the lost everywhere, in the inner cities and the countryside. That has grown through the years to where now we minister on college campuses, we minister in downtown cities, ministry where we use a dog to teach the gospel. And so things have grown through the years, and I'm always meeting new people and growing through those experiences, which brought us to the place where we had met another brother that introduced me to Operation Save America, which was holding the event in Wichita. And so we made a trip out there. To be quite honest, when it comes to working around abortion clinics, in my mind, you know, I was thinking, well, you know, I want to get out there and just reach souls for Christ. And as God began building in my heart and learning the results of the abortions and how that we as Christians, I don't need to be concerned about, you know, all the lost that are out there and trying to lead them to Christ, but also how can we take a stand to stop the wickedness that's going on in our nation. And so there's been some additional changes again, and so now we're looking forward to interfacing and trying to attend and help out with Operation Save America events like they held out in Wichita. So that's kind of how we got to Wichita and how our mission got started. Our mission name is actually called Evangelism Mission, and we're a full-time missionary. I have an assistant that's part-time, and then my daughter is another one of our missionaries, so there's three of us that are structured as missionaries as part of our work, and we're looking forward to what God's going to do in Maine when we get up there.
And I think that you and I will be ministering together in Connecticut at a regional Operation Save America event on the 21st. Is that right? You're coming to that? I think that's where you're beginning your New England tour. Is that right?
Yes, we're starting out there in Connecticut. We'll be there from the 21st to the 25th, and from there we go on to Massachusetts. One of the things, in addition to city ministries, we also try to help small struggling churches with teaching evangelism and then going out door to door and on the streets and different things. So the second week we'll be in Massachusetts, and then we're heading on to Maine. But yeah, we're greatly looking forward to the event there in Connecticut, and again, working to do what we can to educate people and preach against the wickedness of abortion and see how the Lord works and what he does in Connecticut.
So Rodney, how long have you been on the road doing this?
We started the mission work back after the Lord called me to close my business. That was in late fall, early winter of 2006. Officially, the mission work was launched in December of 2006. And so this December, we'll be celebrating 10 years of doing this mission work. And we've been doing it. I did start the mission work while pastoring, so I was pastoring and doing the mission work for 4.5 years. And in 2011, went full-time with this mission work. So we've been doing this full-time, where we've been traveling the country since the summer of 2011. But we've been running the mission work all the way back to 2006.
You're going to be in Maine, I believe, beginning on October 5th, and you're going to stay until the 10th of October, and you're still shaping that trip. And so there may be listeners who could help you to shape it. Talk a little bit about your goals in Maine and how people can plug in.
Okay, well, we do a variety of different things from college campuses to street ministries. So one of the big burdens of our heart, as the Lord had showed me some time ago, is not only in going out and actually doing the evangelism, going out and making contact, but doing what I can to help local fellowship, local churches learn how to share their faith. And college campuses are kind of a tough area to do that. So sometimes we'll hold a day session or an evening session at a church, do some teaching on how to best reach college students or how to do street ministry. I actually do evangelism conventions that are on a whole week of training, both hands-on as well as, just instructional times. So while we're in Maine, we're looking for anybody who has a heart's desire to go out and win souls. We'll be doing that mainly on college campuses. It's been on my heart now for, I think, around 2 years to make a trip up to the New England states and go out to different college campuses. On this trip that we begin, we're leaving here on the 21st in the morning to Maine. We'll be up there until the 10th or 11th we'll be leaving. But that whole three-week period from Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Maine, we'll be visiting college campuses. So even outside of the Maine area, we're looking to get to some schools, possibly in Vermont and in New Hampshire, and possibly even over into Rhode Island. So not only are we able to help churches in teaching them, but also getting their people to get involved and get out there and join us on the streets. Now, as missionaries, of course, one of the things that's very helpful to us is we raise all of our own support. There's no organization, there's no denomination that funds us. So having a church that is willing to welcome us in to hold a mission service, we have a PowerPoint presentation that we tell about all the aspects of our mission work, and the church people get a chance to see that. And some people rise up and say, "Hey, we want to be a supporter of you as a missionary, either in an immediate offering or, through becoming a monthly supporter, just like a missionary to Africa, might have supporters that support them on a monthly basis." So we try to pick up what I call a missionary deputation service. When we're in a community, see if there's anybody that we can connect with, any churches that are interested. And our mission deputation services serve as a building of vision in the hearts of the people. So while we're there sharing about what we do as a mission work, I always share a little bit of a sermonette, which kind of gets people fired up to want to go do something. And so it in itself becomes an opportunity for people in our churches and Christians across the country to learn and be inspired to get involved. Quite frankly, with the condition of America we are in, we as Christians need to get outside the church doors. If we look at New Testament Christianity, it wasn't so focused on the building. I'm not saying that we get away from our buildings or anything like that. I'm 100% behind church buildings and fellowships. The body of Christ is something that needs to pull together. Having a meeting place is awesome. But somehow over the centuries, we've kind of almost got trapped in the building. You know what I mean, Mike? And we need to get out, out in the highways and byways and just share the gospel with people. And we're seeing people get saved on the street, sometimes even after midnight on college campuses, and the shine on their face once they've met Christ and their life has changed. It's just amazing. You know, so we're looking forward to what God's going to do across the country here on this next trip.
So listeners in Maine who would like to pray for you or help you can get in touch with you. How?
The best way would be to email me. That is RK for Rodney Keister, RK@evangelismmission.com. That's my personal email address. And if you email me there, we'll be happy to share a phone number with you once we talk with you. But that'd be the best way to reach me.
So give
You can find out more information on our website as well. Evangelismmission.com has all kinds of information about our mission work. There's some audio messages out there. We have a YouTube channel where you can see another. Our YouTube channel mostly has our street preaching because that's what we've recently just started videoing, so it doesn't have a lot of the other things that we're doing. But if you visit our website, you'll find some links there that just you click on a link, and there's a whole list of types of things that we do, from producing gospel tracks to doing CD productions that we do mail order around the country. There's just a lot of things that we're involved in. It would take far more time than we have in this interview to even cover the broad spectrum of everything we're doing.
So evangelismmission.com, did I get that right, the website?
Yes, that's correct.
Evangelismmission.com, I have checked it out. It's a very helpful resource for you if you're interested in learning more about Rodney Keister and his upcoming visit to Maine, October 5th through October 10th. Let's remember to pray for Rodney. And as we close the interview, Rodney, can I say a quick prayer for you?
That would be awesome. Thank you, brother.
Lord, thanks for Rodney. I know, Lord, that his schedule presses in upon him, and he's feeling that stress today. I ask that you would draw close by your Holy Spirit, that you would give him strength, and that you would help him to make prudent decisions about his schedule so that he can continue to function in the calling that you have placed upon him. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Rodney, thanks for being on Shield of Faith. The most gutsy activist against the so-called gay rights issue is joining me on Shield of Faith today. Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, thank you for taking some time out of your extraordinarily busy schedule to be with us on Shield of Faith.
Oh, thank you, Mike, and I don't think I deserve that title. There's some pretty awesome pro-family activists out there.
Yeah, you know, you haven't been sued for $104 million lately.
No, but I did get to spend time with Bill Watcott in Canada, and even though, you know, a lot of people like to not give him his due and put him down, the guy has accomplished a ton in terms of setting the, basically establishing through the courts, either defending or the rights of Christians or them being eviscerated, but he pushed it. He got them. Now, he is the guy who is basically showing that homosexual activists want to squelch speech itself. They want to shut down dissent. It's not about tolerance. It hasn't been about tolerance for at least the last 10 years.
Bill's incredible. I've had him on the show in the past, and I know I'm departing from our show notes schedule that we talked about ahead of time, but I just can't say enough, I can't heap enough praise on Bill Watcott. I mean, he's been out there as long as we've been hammering away on this issue in the political arena together, and look what he's accomplished. I mean, he's almost single-handedly created a First Amendment for the nation of Canada.
Yeah. Except insofar as it was shut down in one of the cases, and that's not Bill's fault, but they, you know, they pushed the hate speech there, and, you know, if it weren't for our First Amendment, I think the homosexual activist movement would be even stronger in trying to ban speech. They know we've got this thing called the First Amendment, so here in the States, the strategy is to basically deride the whole Christian, Judeo-Christian consensus against sodomy, homosexuality, and transgenderism, and basically say, that's not even worth talking about. In other words, make us out to be the Nazis or the KKK of this generation. Yes, we technically have free speech, but you don't even need to put those guys in a news show. People like, you know, Brian Kammacher, you, me, you know, they've succeeded in working the media to push out the Christian viewpoint against homosexualism.
Yeah, and we need to, which makes it all the more important for us to continue to speak out wherever we can. Here we have a radio show in Maine's capital city, Shield of Faith, and you, of course, just returned from the Values Voters Summit. And you know, you and I both know I have my issues with Family Research Council, but to Tony Perkins' credit, he hasn't shrunk, even though Family Research Council is one of the few pro-family organizations to actually have been violently, physically attacked by the gay homosexual activist community a few years back. The security guard was injured. Was there actually a shooting? I can't remember. In the lobby of the Family Research Council, and the Family Research Council has stayed strong, and I would say in recent years. Maybe even become one of the more aggressive of the huge pro-family groups. Here's how I would put it, Mike.
Family Research Council has not flinched off the homosexual activist movement. Yeah. And that's to Tony Perkins' credit. However, I will say this, that it's not Family Research Council, it's the whole pro-family movement. We are not proactive. I wish at that summit that I was just at, and had a lot of great speakers. Unfortunately, I was at a booth. I only got to see Trump and I think a couple others. The Benham brothers were great. But there should be not just one, but a dozen meetings, summits like that, that actually teach people why homosexual behavior is wrong, why we need to confront the homosexual activists and now the transgender movement, how to do it. This is how the left operates. The right just tend to always be defensive, and so, of course, we have panels on religious freedom and transgender bathroom bills, but you know, Mike, as well as I do, that the pro-family movement largely is not proactive, and that's why we lose. In fact, I had somebody come up to me at the FRC event and said, you know, I've been going to these things for 10 years, and they used to have, you know, pastors preaching against homosexuality, the sin movement that calls itself gay, you know. But you know what I'm talking about? It's always defensive, and so, as the Benham brothers said, the ceiling becomes the floor. Mm-hmm. We used to talk about homosexual so-called marriage. Guess what? I don't think there was a panel devoted to homosexual marriage and reinstituting, you know, getting rid of Obergefell and having real marriage back in the United States, because the ceiling becomes the floor. Now the homosexual lobby, oh, that's over. And a lot of conservatives and even a lot of Christians are like, okay, that battle's over. Let's move on to the next defeat. And that's how we are. And that's why we're getting crushed.
Yep. And so react for me on that, in light of what you just said, to the title of the conference that I'm doing with Scott Lively. The descent from sodomy into sexual orientation to transgendering. What's next? And what I was thinking when I came up with that title, that we have witnessed in my lifetime, in our lifetime of work on this issue, a descent into a collapse from being able to debate sodomy and sort of agree, at least, especially among Christians or even among the world's major religions, to agree in the cultural space, both inside our religions and outside of our religions, that sodomy is something that's worthy of, dare I say it, punishment. You know, I mean, that's where we used to be not very long ago, and we've descended from it.
Yes, and Mike, you're absolutely right, and I think it's a brilliant title, and of course Scott is a brilliant man. And Scott gets it, and most people don't get it. And what Scott understands is that the language accompanies the gradual capitulation. And so now, somebody pointed out to me that even AFA, which is the one that, you know, led the boycott of Target, even AFA in its online petition, I believe, or something that AFA was doing. I love the American Family Association. Tim Wildman and Buddy Smith and those guys are awesome. But even AFA used the phrase transgender community.
Hmm.
Now think about that. Do we talk about the adultery community? I guess we do talk about the porn community. You know, I mean, we say it in a different way. But, you know, this idea of behaviors that are unbiblical, sinful, labeling them as community, you know, where does it stop? Are we going to talk about the fisting community? Because, you know, fisting, this disgusting homosexual practice, is making a comeback.
Mm.
Are we going to talk about the, you know, it's always this language which helps the other side, which wants to make this about civil rights and victimization.
So
people really being victimized these days are Christians and people of faith and people of morals. Those are the ones who are the new victims in this Orwellian agenda.
So the Values Voters Summit, you just came back from it. It was last weekend. Donald Trump, the Republican nominee for president, spoke at that event. What'd you think?
Well, I liked part of Trump's speech. Now, of course, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, we're nonpartisan. We can't endorse candidates. But personally, I'll tell you what I thought. What I thought was interesting, what was lacking, was Donald Trump did not mention homosexual so-called marriage, much less the Obergefell gay marriage decision by the Supreme Court. He did not mention, I believe, he did not mention the pro-life issue. And he didn't even mention the transgender issue. Hmm. What he did mention was the Supreme Court. And so this is fascinating that at the safest place for a candidate, and especially a Republican Party candidate, the Values Voters Summit, Donald Trump left out the big three. Of course, you know, you didn't mention pornography. I mean, you know.
How could he?
Donald Trump had strip clubs in his betting, you know, facilities. So, you know, he gave a good speech in terms of, I think, people, a lot of Christians and a lot of pro-family people have sort of reconciled that it's either Trump or the other candidate, and so many are going to Trump that way.
Tony Perkins, right? I mean, I know Perkins. I don't know if he's endorsed Trump, but I know he had a major speaking part at the Republican convention, which was Trump's.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Perkins has thrown in his lot with Trump, and I think, Mike, it's you don't have to be a PhD to understand the calculation.
Mm-hmm.
The race is a two-man race. You've got Gary Johnson as a libertarian. By the way, Gary Johnson is radically pro-homosexual, and I believe he's also pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get a lot of social conservatives going to Gary Johnson. Hillary Clinton is and Tim Kaine, her running mate, are incredibly dedicated to the pro-homosexual, pro-transgender, and the abortion movement. And so I think a lot of people are saying, hey, what choice do we have? And they're voting for, they're planning to vote for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm among them.
What's interesting to me is, Mike, he didn't even throw a bone at the Values Voter Summit. And so I predict if Trump becomes president, it would be wise for there to – I know there's going to be a temptation of a lot of the Christians. They're going to want to saddle up to Trump. And, of course, he has a lot of evangelical Christian advisors. But I think it would also be wise and prudent for – a lot of Christian conservative groups to also be ready to fight for the truth in a Trump administration, because it's obvious that this is a man who really has very little conscience on these issues. I don't think he's really given a lot of thought to a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I'll be voting for Trump, and I agree with you. I don't think that he has given a lot of thought to these issues, and I'm gearing up for the fight of my life if he pulls this off. I think there's a chance he could pull off a landslide here. The dynamics of the political dynamics here are unique in my lifetime.
I think, especially with the literal fall and then the figurative fall by Hillary Clinton with the ridiculous deplorables remark.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a turning point in Trump's season, and I think there's a good chance he will win. But again, even let's just say this: even in a Trump landslide, mm-hmm. what will the pro-family movement? How will the pro-family movement respond? Now, I'm going to be writing about an upcoming event here where Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House and one of the most famous Republican conservatives in the world, is speaking at a Log Cabin Republican event. Log Cabin Republicans are the homosexual activist so-called Republican group. Well, they are Republicans. They're just pro-sin Republicans, right?
Right.
So Gingrich is going there, and you know that Newt Gingrich understands the folly of sexual orientation ideology and making homosexuality a civil right.
Of course
he understands
does.
It. In fact, I remember reading a long time ago in the gay newspaper, the Washington Blade in D.C., I think he called it public policy madness. you know, this idea of marriage and all this based on homosexuality. And yet here he is speaking before a Republican homosexual group, because that's the way the party's moving. They want to incorporate a sort of conservative Republican version of gay rights as part of their, you know, the way they're going to move forward.
Yeah, there's the fight ahead for Christianity in politics in the West is not an easy one on abortion and homosexuality. I think it's much harder on homosexuality than it is on abortion. My sense.
Well, it's much harder because there's no power in the movement.
Yeah,
there's a lot of power in the pro-life movement. Trump knows, but do we barely have a movement on the pro-family? You know.
No, all
fighters against the homosexual agenda.
Look, you and I both know all we have and all we've had really for 30 years is a fundraising establishment. We created an institutional assets capable of exploiting the sodomy issue for the purpose of filling up the financial coffers of large ministries, large organizations. But
can I say something about that, Mike? To a large degree, you're right, because millions and millions and millions of dollars have been raised.
Tens of millions.
Citing the danger of homosexualism. And then, sadly, when we lose or when there's a big fight, and the capitulation has been astonishing. The Republicans barely fight on this issue anymore, if at all. I mean, a good example to me is, where are the hearings about transsexuals in the military?
Look, I'll speak for Maine. I'll speak for Maine, Peter. In my entire closing in on 35 years of working on this issue diligently and professionally in politics and culture in the state of Maine, I have never once, not once, Peter, met and worked with a Republican who was willing to risk really anything to exert himself politically or herself politically on this issue. It's bewildering. I can think of a handful of Republican senators and House members, legislators, who actually gave up their careers for the abortion issue, and not one in 30 years. All I got was lip service. Oh yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, but when push came to shove, we almost. I think the strategy that the Christian Civic League of Maine followed here was the right one. We went to direct democracy and we used the referendum process, reasoning that the institutions were going to collapse on this issue. But what we ended up doing was almost giving the politicians an excuse, because they just got used to saying, well, you know, we'll let the people decide that. It was just one referendum after another.
Right. Which is actually a variation. That's a great point, Mike. It's a variation of the exemption strategy. Because by always talking about exemptions, you basically made it easier for the pastors to say, well, you know, we're going to get an exemption. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? The homosexual activists are targeting the exemptions now. Right. They don't want any exemptions. They don't recognize your right to hold a belief on homosexuality by treating it like racism. In other words, if you oppose homosexuality, you are the moral equivalent of the KKK. Mm-hmm. This is what most Christians don't understand. The other side is serious about Saul Alinsky demonizing their opponents. I mean, they've demonized me, they've demonized you, they demonize anybody who steps out, and especially a politician. I mean, remember when Gary Bauer fell when he was running for president?
Yep.
Remember, I remember watching Jay Leno, and Jay Leno said, yeah, the homophobe. He was the homophobe candidate. Now, Gary Bauer probably spent less than 5% of his time, probably less than 1%, talking about the homosexual activist agenda. Maybe he talked about gay marriage or whatever, but it wasn't the singular focus of his campaign. It wasn't even one of the major issues.
But, Peter,
it was easy to demonize him as a homophobe.
We've been such wimps. I think when you speak about that, I think of Scott Lively. I mean, he was targeted for just excruciating ridicule on one of those comedy shows, which the millennials watch and take as literal news. I forget which one.
Comedy Central, I think.
Yeah, Comedy Central, and but yet Scott is, as you know, he's the speaker at our conference on October 7th and 8th here in Maine, the descent from sodomy into sexual orientation to transgendering, what's next. But Scott's still very effective, and he's one of the most effective Christians, not just in the United States but around the world. I mean, he is now as he's approaching. I think he's going to keep going right until the Lord takes him home. But like you and I, getting older, but he's entering into a really effective period of ministry, I think, globally. So it looks like, my point is, it looks like these comedy shows and the culture using sarcasm has devastated us. But we're still going. We're still speaking.
They want to stamp us out, Mike, and Scott's never going to be stamped out, and you're never going to be stamped out, and I'm not going to quit, but the goal is so that the next generation just doesn't see it as an important fight.
Correct.
And it is startling to see the difference between young people on the life issue and young people on the homosexual issue, because, as you know, there's a vast army of young people who are active on the life issue. And I say it's because it's easier. One of the reasons is it's so much easier to be on that issue. There's a lot of warm and fuzzies for standing up to life. I have a Down syndrome brother. Many people would like to eliminate the likes of my brother in the womb. Mm. You know, sort of like the Nazis. Everybody has to be perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the warm and fuzzies of defending human life. The only serious warm and fuzzies, I think, on the homosexual issue are, number one, you're standing with God. But that's tough, and you suffer a lot.
Yeah.
You get a lot of persecution. But
good
number
point.
Two, you're the ex-gays. You know, the ex-gays are a wonderful, wonderful movement of people, and I call it the greatest story never told, because the media hates to tell the ex-gay story. Oh, here's a guy who once thought he was, quote, gay. Sometimes you get people like Joseph Sciambra, who was, like, deeply involved in homosexual pornography and drugs and this terrible lifestyle, and now he's free and he's out there warning people about the lifestyle. You would think that would be a story that would grip the media, and they'd say, well, we want to tell these heartwarming stories, but instead, political correctness
exactly.
takes over, and they basically want to just deny telling these stories because the media is corrupt. As corrupt as the media has been in telling the Donald Trump story, and it's been pretty biased against Trump, imagine, I mean, especially now after the primary,
mm-hmm.
I think that was the plan. Savage him after the primary, let him get the nomination and savage him. Of course, I think Trump is outsmarting the media because they just don't get it. He's a master manipulator of the media. However, as biased as the coverage has been on Trump, Mike, it's 100 times more biased on these homosexual and transgender issues, because this is the left basically imposing what they regard as their morality. The left used to say, don't impose your morality on me. Now they now we should say to them, don't impose your leftist morality on us. We're not interested.
Right, exactly. I mean, I've said for 30 years here in Maine that the gospel of the left is rooted in the idea that all sex is good sex as long as it's consensual, and that's their gospel. If you're a Christian and you think about worshiping God, then you need to take the feelings that you have as you think about worshiping God, and if you want to try to understand what we're up against, you need to say, this is how these people who control the funds and control the political resources on the left, that's how they feel about the approval of sodomy and the approval of sex outside of marriage. It's like the feeling we get from worship. It's a religious experience. It's a religious experience.
and they I call them, I'm starting to talk more and more about gay and secular fundamentalism, because they have their own, quote, fundamentals, Mike. Ours are Jesus is divine, Jesus is God, he was born of a virgin, God made the world, we answer to God, Jesus died for our sins, he rose from the dead. Those are our truthful fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Their fundamentals are gayness is inherent and part of your inherent identity. You can't escape it. All these, the fundamentals of homosexualism are, they probably believe more firmly in those bogus fundamentals than many Christians do in the real fundamentals.
Yeah, and you know,
and I think that's the shame of our movement. The homosexual activists behave as if they have the truth. We act as if we have some. We're ashamed of the truth. When in reality, we have the truth. Look at homosexuality. God says it's an abomination. Well, what a shocker! The behavior that God says is an abomination is vastly disproportionately represented among sexually transmitted diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, Mike, what a shocker! Now, syphilis is literally making a comeback thanks to homosexual men. Mm-hmm. It's the new gay disease. I think upwards of 80, high 80s, maybe 90% of syphilis cases are now linked to men who have sex with men. Not all of them identify as gay. You've got the secret, you know, that a lot of people, they don't call themselves gay, but they're practicing sodomy on the side or what have you. I mean, what we're finding in the science is that homosexuality is as bad as God said it was.
Mm-hmm. But you'll never
hear it. You can't change that.
You'll never hear that on CNN. Or even on Fox News, and
yeah, I was going to say, forget CNN. Fox is becoming one of them. And I wrote a whole paper on Fox.
Yeah, you wrote. I was going to say you wrote the book on Fox News, and you need to.
So when you lose Fox News, Mike, you know it's never a good sign.
No, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't lost Fox News in a life issue. You got people, and again, because life is. They have built up power, and I don't know if we are ever going to build up the political power. I'm not saying the life movement has used it super effectively, although sometimes they have. I think I could probably quibble with a lot of their strategy. But they have built up a massive base, whereas the sodomy issue, the homosexuality issue, a lot of people are just embarrassed. They don't want to talk. I don't want to look like I'm obsessed. I don't want to look like I'm anti-gay. I'm like, oh, my goodness. That's like one of the terrible sins today.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true.
I'm a pastor. I mean, didn't you get kicked out of your own church for some event you were going to hold?
Yes. It's
let's that's not, pathetic. I mean, and then he preached about courage the next week. I mean, come on. Give me a break. Come on, pastor. You can do it. You know, trust God.
Yeah.
You know, but it's so sad. It's so pathetic.
Yeah. So we're talking with Peter LaBarbera. He's the president of Americans for Truth about Homosexuality. Peter, tell listeners how they can learn more about you and get in touch with you.
Oh, great, Mike. Our website is AmericansForTruth.com. Americans for Truth, written out, F-O-R, truth.com. I would love to attend your event October 7th. We've got one with Linda Harvey October 28th. So, and that's in Chicago, but come to our website, sign up for our email newsletter, and get involved.
Peter, thanks on a moment's notice for her taking time to be with me. I apologize for taking 5 minutes more than you said you could give me, 20 minutes, but we appreciate it, and we appreciate you.
That's okay, and I'd just like to encourage all the people of Maine, you know, get behind you, stay true to the Bible, trust God, stop worrying about what man and the world thinks, get out there and defend truth, because the other side is defending lies with great zeal. And if Christians don't stand for truth, where does that leave us?
Whoa, wasn't that great with Peter LaBarbera from Illinois joining us in the last 25 minutes talking about Americans for Truth about homosexuality. And now it's going to get even better as I have the privilege of bringing back, I think now for the third time since we started Shield of Faith at the beginning of the year, Paul Madore, who is the president of Maine Resistance. Paul, thanks for being on Shield of Faith.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be back again.
And you and I have over 30 years been working together in Maine very publicly to resist the so-called sexual orientation movement, and a new organization has been birthed out of our heart to do the right thing, to fight for righteousness on this issue, called Maine Resistance. Just take a minute to speak to that issue. We were working on we came together recently, beginning of the summer, to work on a referendum, and now this organization is getting started, called Maine Resistance.
Well, Mike, the name Maine Resistance, what resonates with me with that is that Maine people, Maine families, Maine fathers will not yield to a fascist regime that forces people to accept a sinful behavior that is intrinsically evil, that it's an objective disorder that evokes moral concern. Of course, we're talking about homosexuality and the act of sodomy, and we're just not going to yield to that. And of course, that resonates well again today, given the statement that I'd read just a few moments ago that you had penned earlier this morning. about our republic, the need for a strong and unequivocal republic that has the leadership of a people that embrace the ideals of a republic.
Yeah, I wrote a column that's published on the Maine Resistance website, which is reclaimvirtue.com. Reclaimvirtue.com. Basically, we repurposed the website that was created for the purpose to go forward with the referendum, and we've made it into the Maine Resistance website. And the column I wrote is titled "Maine is a Republic, Not a Democracy." And the quote that you're referring to, I wrote, "The truth about Maine and the sodomy issue is that the adults have shirked their responsibility, especially those who accepted political responsibilities over the past four decades. And now our children and grandchildren are paying a price we never could have imagined." I mean, transgendered bathrooms, really? Seriously?
Yeah. Well, you know, to redirect something that you said here, that the adults have shirked their responsibility, I think it's been stolen from them. It's been stolen by a lobby, a very radical and well-funded lobby.
George Soros.
That have broken the backs of the of Maine people. We went to referendum, giving the voters an opportunity to vote this disordered lifestyle down and to keep it in its proper place and proper perspective. And the Maine voters agreed repeatedly. They just agreed. But what they've done is they've come back and they've broken the backs of Maine people by insisting that this become law. And so we've left the safety and the long held tradition that Maine is first, that United States of America is first a republic, not a democracy. We're not under any obligation to abide by these laws. That's why people are going to continue to be arrested, be harassed, and be punished for rejecting the homosexual lifestyle.
And you were on the receiving end of this kind of persecution recently. In fact, in late July. Why don't you tell us about that? I mean, just briefly.
I was making plans to host my son, who was traveling from Pittsburgh with his family, with his five beautiful children, four girls and a boy, and they were going to spend it here in Maine. They married and settled in Pittsburgh, and they hadn't seen their home for quite some time. And so I began to look around in the area to see if there's a place that I could host them where we could all live together. And I heard of a place that was a facility that was available for rent on a local lake that we have here, Sebattis Lake, and it's a local waterfront that we have. And I called and spoke to the individual. When he had learned that I had been in the media recently sponsoring a referendum along with you and others, putting an end to the sexual orientation laws and removing sexual orientation from the Maine human rights statutes, he became very curious about my call, and then he wanted to reaffirm my personal identity. He asked me who I was again. I gave him my name, and then he said under no circumstance would he ever rent to me as an individual because of my religious views. And I said, "Oh, really? Really? Seriously? that's interesting." I said, "You don't have a right to do that. This is a double standard. You punish Christians, but you don't want Christians to punish you when you discriminate." And I filed a discrimination suit with the Maine Human Rights Commission shortly after.
Yeah, and that's in process as we speak, I assume.
Right. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah,
being investigated, et cetera. But see, right. that's what this is all about. It's about punishment, and it's ironic because the truth tells every human heart listening to us that sodomy is what ought to be punished, not righteousness when it comes to sexuality. But they're getting away with being the punishers, with punishing people for just believing something that's unspeakable that we shouldn't even really have to talk about. Right?
Well, this is the tyranny that we've been talking about all along. We've always sensed that the heavy hand of the legal system when the authority of that legal system is into the hands of individuals who are literally disordered, who have no sense of justice. And I want to say this prolifically, that they are disordered. People who sport a sexual orientation outside their birth, outside their birthright, if you will, for the lack of a better expression, become disordered. Sexual orientation outside your natural birth orientation is disordered. It's intrinsically disordered.
Right, which is rooted in your biology, correct? I mean, your biology.
Right, absolutely, that's right.
Right. I mean, now we're to the point where in order to be taken seriously as a public intellectual, you have to entertain with due somber tones and seriousness and intellectual curiosity the notion that our embodiment, that how we are made, created, born physically, is completely unrelated to our sexuality and our sexual desires and our sexual impulses. Those two things are completely separated, or can be separated in the mind of an individual who chooses to separate them. And what you're saying is that idea is disordered. Did I get that right?
It's intrinsically disordered. Homosexuality in and of itself is an objective disorder. The church has always recognized that. The Christian church has always recognized that as a Roman Catholic. That's deeply rooted in the human psyche, because it relies on faith and reason to have a proper understanding. And now that's become a weapon for liberal society as a means of punishing those who live by biblical teaching, biblical standards. And that very standard is a pillar of our society. What's being attacked here is not just the idea of sexual identity and proper gender oriented, proper gender, male and female, is another pillar of our society. They are now attacking the very pillar of our society, and attacking the very tenets of faith and reason. It's turning the whole thing upside down. And when people ask rhetorically, where will it end? Folks, it's not going to end. It'll never end. We're going to see the most offensive and bizarre sexual practices come out of this disordered thinking that we ever thought was possible.
But Paul, we are not without hope. I mean, most people, I believe, who are listening to us are scared to death of this issue. But we need to stop being afraid. And you and I have come to the conclusion that while Maine may not at this time be ready for a referendum, it could once again be ready for a referendum on this. Here's one thing for sure. All right. This issue is not dead, and it's not resolved, and it's not going away, and history is not on the side of the left on this issue. There's absolutely no doubt about it, because if history is on the side of the left on this issue, we're all dead. I mean, it's the end of civilization.
Right. Which is why you and I haven't given up.
So we know that history, we are not without hope. So what do we do next? And you and I have concluded, okay, we have to set aside the referendum. We're not taking it off the table. We it's there as a tactic, as a weapon within a republic. But what we need is to come together to address this issue of fear among ourselves, among good-hearted people, most of whom are Christians, but not all. I mean, there's many people in Maine who make no claim to Christianity, but who feel the same way we do for common sense reasons. And they're afraid as well. People are afraid. So what do? We need to come together, and we Christians need to pray, and we need to ask the Holy Spirit to guide us. And if we aren't Christians, then we need to come together in common cause for the sake of our what we hold dear, our values, with respect to family being a basic being a basic unit of government, right? So you and I have formed Maine Resistance for this purpose. What is that purpose? To address the fear. And Paul, I'm sorry, but let me just make this final point here. Facebook isn't enough. Facebook isn't enough. Social networking, internet, the email, that's not enough to overcome the fear. Don't think you're going to overcome the fear by left-clicking a like button on an occasional post that you agree with on this topic. That's not going to help you overcome the fear, is it, Paul?
It's no, no. I wanted to add that the culture of homosexuality, the culture of gender identity and transgenderism is at war with Christianity. It's at war with our conscience. This is perhaps the most oppressive war you can have, when public authority, when public law, when the weight of the legal system is there to intimidate and to threaten you into abiding by rules and laws and standards that are at war with our conscience, with our Christian conscience, and that's got to be the most violent war you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like taking a significant portion of our society, which could happen to be of one culture or another, whether it's Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Gentile, or, you know, Polish, Irish, French. You take your pick, and literally wiping them off the map. In this case, it's Christianity. It's those who are Christian, and we're at war with this culture, and we're not going to give up. That's really where the battleground is.
Hmm. So we've formed Maine Resistance, and we're inviting everybody listening to learn more about us and to join with us. Maine Resistance, ReclaimVirtue.com. There's plenty of narrative there, text, opinion. You can get a sense for what we said during the referendum exploration process over the last year, year and a half. And now we're moving forward with Maine Resistance, forming the organization. We're in a political season this fall. The entire 186 members of the legislature are up for a vote in November. So they're all out going door to door, talking to the public. And I mentioned that in my column. And then, of course, the new legislature sits in January. And we are a republic. We make our laws primarily, not exclusively, but we make our laws through elected representatives. That's what a republic is. We're designed to function as a republic, with our elected representatives meeting from January to June of next year for the purpose of resolving issues like this one, taking on issues like this one. Now, one of the problems, as I alluded to earlier, Paul, is that an unintentional consequence of us being so successful with the referendum over the last three decades is we let the politicians off the hook. So you and I are becoming resolved in the idea that we're going to put the focus where it belongs in a republic, which is on our elected officials.
Well, when I was in high school, I always had the
and sorry to interrupt you, but we've only got about 30 seconds. So
well, you know, you can imagine what it's like to be a defensive lineman and how you've seen them practice on the field. Anybody who's been in high school sees that. And that's really what our job is to grab a hold of the enemy and just push them back, into the end zone, push them into the end zone rather than let them have their way. It's, we really have to scream out. And I think the organization, Maine Resistance, an affiliate of Mass Resistance, I think is the weapon that we need to gather people, to bring people together.
We're talking with Paul Madore. He's the president of Maine Resistance. I am the executive director of Maine Resistance, in addition to being the president of Helping Hands Ministries, which is sponsor of this program. Thanks for tuning in. In
some past mistakes that I can't seem to leave behind. Haunting voices, silent cries, and long-time fears. I need to know you're with me through these tears.
Thanks for tuning into my radio show today. To learn more about my work and ministry, go to my website at helpinghandsministriesmaine.com or give me a call at 207-956-0819. May the Holy Spirit make you strong and courageous today.